bamboozled by the whole scene. She was not with us today. This was a boy's day out. "I'm serious," I continued. "How about we do something really out there? How about we walk across Lebanon?" That got their attention. "How long would that take?" asked Chris, unconsciously adjusting the pocket square in his neatly pressed blazer. "Oh, I don't know, a month?" I was totally winging it. "Not sure my wife would let me do that," said Chris. "I've got work," replied Harry, to the evident surprise of the ruddy-cheeked old man in a colourful blazer sitting next to him. He had obviously assumed, from Harry's gloriously unkempt appearance, that he was on some sort of government day release programme for ne'er-do-wells, financed by some socialist council that, in his view, was responsible for the decline and fall of Western civilization. "Oh, come on, are we mice or men?" I asked insistently. "Well, I'd have to pretend that it was some sort of extended work trip," said Chris. "What's the food like?" said Harry. "Is it all foreign?" "It's the best food in the world, hands down, you'll love it," I said enthusiastically. "So, are we up for it?" "Yes," said Chris. "Only if you buy that round," said Harry, looking at his empty glass again. And that was that. A plan was agreed, and then promptly forgotten about. The idea to walk across Lebanon was not quite as off the wall as it sounded. I was born in Beirut in 1967 to English parents, and lived there until I was sent to boarding school in England at the age of 7. This coincided with Lebanon descending into a vicious civil war that started in 1975 and officially finished in 1990. My life morphed into a rather schizophrenic existence, bouncing between a posh English boarding school and life in what was then considered to be the most dangerous country in the world. I was always rather jealous that I was just too young to have enjoyed Lebanon in her pre-war heyday, when she was known as the Switzerland of the Middle East and Beirut the Paris of the East. Lebanon was a beautiful, sophisticated country full of culture, skiing, beaches, nightlife, an exotic playground for the international jet set. Quite why it was ever compared to Switzerland, a phenomenally dull country with a penchant for anti-multiculturalism, was beyond me. From what I knew of Lebanon, it was more a combination of the Reeper Barn and the south of France, with a skiing option. My parents, like most non-natives to anywhere, were more evangelical about the place than the locals. They adored the country, and they were both in love with the mountains in particular. They loved to hike in them. I have photos of countless family outings there occasionally, with me bringing up the rear seated on a donkey. I think my dad was a frustrated adventurer, duty-bound to join the family company, but never happier than when on what we always called expeditions. My mother adored walking, and one of the few things my parents seemed to have in common was a love of setting off on an expedition into the Lebanese mountains or further afield into Syria. I always felt that, unlike my older half-brother, Marc-Henri, and half-sisters Hattie and Anne-Dominique from my parents' first marriages, I'd missed the boat in really getting to know Lebanon. The advent of war made free travel around the country much more difficult, and we found ourselves more and more confined within the Maronite heartland in the hills just above Beirut, where my father and his first wife, Diana, had built our house when he'd taken over the family company from his father in the 50s. And then, when the war had finally ended, and Lebanon started along a new, precarious path of relative peace, my parents divorced. Out of the blue, just after my 18th birthday, my father suddenly didn't show up for a family get-together. He had left my mother for his secretary, Kathy, a relationship that would not last long, but served as a springboard for his permanent escape. From the moment I hit my teens, my father and I had had a very difficult relationship. Before this, we'd got on brilliantly. We'd shared a mutual love of cricket and tennis, and I adored him. Then I committed the cardinal sin, developing opinions of my own. I started answering back, a crime that appeared to be on a par with treason in his eyes. Having had children of my own, I can now see how annoying it is, but in the grand scheme of things, there are far worse things in the world than to be spirited and opinionated. Being a bad father, for example. Things rapidly went downhill. He hated the way I dressed, he disliked the music I played, he loathed my attitude. To be honest, he seemed to disapprove of pretty much everything that I did. He seemed permanently disappointed in me, but was unable to express why. We were not one but two generations apart from each other. He was 43 years old when I was born in 1967, the so-called summer of love. Not that he would have